Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Turns out, by the way, that oil rigs today generally don't cause spills. They are technologically very advanced.
It is the Savage Nation, and don't you fret, our supreme maximum leader is on the beach. He is inspecting the beach as we speak. He has not abandoned you. Of course, it's the wrong beach. It's on a street off Chicago's lakefront. He's on Lakeshore Drive. That beach, not down in the Gulf. He visited the Gulf perfunctorily, and I guess that was enough for the schmucks who were watching basketball last night. Welcome to the Savage Nation. On the way home from the studio last night, I stopped into an Italian restaurant for some Italian bread I like to bring home before I went home for dinner. And I saw a slew of middle-aged people in there at the bar watching television. White middle-class people. I didn't know what they were looking at because I don't know. It was like I was an observer from another planet. So I get the seated bread. I pay a few bucks for it, say hello to one of the waiters. I look up, and they cheer. They break out in cheers. Yay! And some goon with a basketball threw it somewhere. I ran out muttering to myself as though I was from another planet. After a day like this with Obama giving that performance, they're worried about basketball. Now you understand why we have Obama as the maximum leader. Yep, we've gone from hope and change to dope and strange in 18 months. That's right, from hope and change to dope and strange in only 18 months. That soundbite we played is Obama just a few months ago on April 2nd saying oil rigs are safe. Play it again, Sam. Play it again.
It turns out, by the way, that oil rigs today generally don't cause spills. They are technologically very advanced.
Yeah, all right. Well, look, people make mistakes. Now, yesterday I did a thing on why the left turned on Obama, finally, on the Gulf thing, and I said it's because he failed their religion called nature. And I've gotten some amazing requests for that, and we have it ready to go again today. I don't know when I'm going to play it. But my point is that the reason the leftists turned on Obama, their messiah, is because he turned out to be a failed messiah, in that he failed them in their new religion called Gaia. And because Gaia supersedes even the messiah, whatever, you get the picture. By the way, I turned on MSNBC and I couldn't believe it. There was a new show by Elliot Spitzer. I guess they're waiting for a title. We suggest that they call Elliot Spitzer's new show on MSNBC By the Hour. Thank you, Beowulf. By the Hour by Elliot Spitzer. You talk about credibility. I mean, MSNBC was the laughingstock of the media to begin with. Now they've added, you know, it's like McCain ran on experience, right? So how did he top that one? He brings in Sarah Palin, who had no experience and killed his campaign. The same with MSNBC. They have absolutely no credibility anywhere in the media. So how do they prove that they should have credibility? They bring in Elliot Spitzer, former governor of New York. I guess next they'll give the hooker a show. I think she writes for the Post, whatever. Now let's talk about Admiral Haystack. The Admiral Haystack story is very interesting. Now, the reason I call him Admiral Haystack is because the guy did such an aw shucks. You know, the guy is very appealing. Oh, is he slick. These Democrats, you got to hand it to them, they're smoother than the Repubs. But the Dems are, I mean, this guy could have had a piece of alfalfa in his teeth, you know, just sucking on a piece of grass. Well, aw shucks, I sure don't know. I don't know. And then they asked him, what about Clinton? You know, they're blaming Clinton now. Now, who was the only one of the media who told you Rahm Emanuel did it and he was hiding in a bar mitzvah, at a bar mitzvah in Israel? Me. Now, do you expect that to be a headline on Fox News tomorrow, that Savage was days ahead of everyone? Of course not. They're my competitors. Why should they acknowledge that I said Rahm Emanuel's hiding in Israel with his son's bar mitzvah. He's hiding in Israel. I've been doing this for the whole week. Don't you remember just yesterday on the show I said to you, wait a minute, the president's facing the greatest crisis in his career. His chief of staff is at a bar mitzvah in Israel, right? He's only a plane ride away. He can come back in 8 to 10, 12 hours. He's probably there on Air Force 3 anyway. He's not there on United. But no, he's not coming back because he was ducking reporters on this on the Joe Haystack thing. So I called that one, but I don't get credit for it. What do I need the credit for? Truthfully, at this stage of my career, I don't need the credit. What am I going to do, get another gold star in heaven? I'm just telling you, those of you who listen to me, I know why you listen to me. And you listen to me because usually through simply using inductive reasoning, I can come to the right conclusion. It's not that I'm privy to any knowledge. Don't you understand? I don't go to cocktail parties. In fact, I go to no parties. In fact, I don't even drink cocktails. But what I drink isn't the issue. The issue is none of this is based upon insider information. I have no links to anyone in politics. I don't know anyone in politics. I don't want to know anyone in politics. I don't know anyone in the media. I don't talk to anyone in the media. I really don't talk to anybody in the media. First of all, I live in San Francisco. That's to start with. So no one's out here. This is the province of provinces. I may as well be living in Macau as well as living in San Francisco. San Francisco is so disconnected from America, it may as well be a small gambling island off the coast of the Philippines, for God's sakes. But here we are, watching the world go by. It gets worse by the day. Every day gets worse, from hope and change to dope and strange in only 18 months. As you well know, this is Memorial Day weekend, and we're all enjoying our freedom because of the men laying in the ground under those crosses. That's right, because of the men laying in the ground under those crosses. I would say especially those men laying in the ground under those crosses are the reasons that we are even able to have this radio show today. And you would expect the commander-in-chief, during a period where there are two wars, to honor those fallen, wouldn't you? But instead, he shamefully goes and, like the narcissist and hedonist that he is, he runs off to Chicago to what, have a party? Where is he? What is he doing that it's so important? What is he doing in Chicago, by the way, that's so important? Something, again, doesn't ring true about this story. Do you actually believe he's going to Chicago because he wants to be there, because he promised them he'd be? Who did he promise in Chicago that he'd be there in Chicago? Does anyone have an answer to that question? That doesn't matter. Even the cover story is bullcrap. So you think of things like Baby Rebozo and Nixon. Remember Nixon had Baby Rebozo? It's so long ago, maybe many of you don't remember Baby Rebozo. Just the name itself was indicting. You know what I'm saying? Anyone who had a friend named Baby Rebozo right away, you know what I'm saying? You knew right away. So it's the same here. I mean, who is Obama's Baby Rebozo? Who's the Baby Rebozo? The guy who was allegedly involved, I think, has been indicted and he's already gone. So who is the Baby Rebozo of the Obama administration? Who knows? Who can keep up with it? Do you think anyone cares? The schmucks in the bar last night, the restaurant, looking at the basketball goons. There you go. There's America. There's your America of today. That's how you wind up with what you have in the White House and in the Senate and in the Congress. And that's how you wind up with a disgraced governor as a newscaster on MSNBC. But let's talk about the Joe Haystack or Haystack thing. Okay, he's saying that Bill Clinton was the courier for the job offer from Rahm Emanuel. Now, the reason he's saying that is because they're covering for Rahm Emanuel, in my opinion. That's my suspicion. My suspicion is it was Rahm Emanuel, the fixer, who went to Haystack probably with a towel or without a towel. I don't know the circumstances. In a gym, out of a gym, before a workout, after a rubdown. I don't know. But my guess is that Rahm Emanuel went to Haystack, put his finger in his chest, and said, listen, Admiral, I'm the boss here, and if you do, we'll give you a job. And Haystack, being the politician and the admiral he once was, said, hey, Rahm, I'll tell you what you could do with that finger, Rahm. And he told him. But the fact of the matter is, it was not Rahm who was fingered. Now they finger Bubba. How does Bubba reappear on the scene every time there's a situation? He is the Zelig of Democrat politics. Now, you know, there's going to be some fallout of it being Bubba Clinton. that you haven't thought of yet because I'm the only one in the media who put 3 and 4 together and came up with 17. Here it is. Not only did Bill Clinton just disgrace himself as a world, let's say, he in his own mind, he's an internationally famous figure, never really almost impeached. All right? Now, of course, that's true in the minds of many women from Boca Raton in synagogues who pay him $200,000 a year to touch a suit. But that's because they're all Monica Lewinsky's in waiting. Although they're all 85 years old, it's too late for them anyway. But if they only had their fantasy, it would be with Bill Clinton. All the yentas and the delicatessens in Boca Raton. So to them, he will always be the man. You know, he'll never do wrong. So not only did he tarnish his own career again, right, again, because he diminished himself by saying, I did it. But he's destroyed Hillary Clinton's chances, in my opinion. Once again, he's sabotaged his wife. While she's feasting on Peking duck or whatever they're feeding her over there, I wouldn't think that they're feeding her once-roasted dissident kidney over rice. It is possible if they have that dish and we haven't heard about it. They could have twice-basted dissident kidney over fried rice over there for all we know. I don't know what they're eating. Maybe it's thrice-basted dissident kidney over a brown rice because it's a health food dish. But she's over there eating thrice-roasted dissident kidney over rice. And all of a sudden, her heart drops. She finds out there he is again. She's out of the country, and Bubba suddenly disgraced the family name once again. So in other words, there's a boomerang now on her. That's how I see it. So where does that leave all of us? Oh, God, if I only knew, I would tell you. And I will the minute I return on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Why do fools fall? Same reason they vote for Obama. I don't know about you. I know it's a dead audience today. That's number one. That's A. Been in the business 16 years, I can tell an audience by the lights already. I tell it's like a restaurant that's normally packed with people outside with reservations, 2 weeks in advance. On a Friday like today, when they admit that Joe Haystack spoke to Bubba, which is, of course, they picked a day to tell you the Joe Haystack story today because they knew that it's like a restaurant of being about 15-20% full on a day like today with radio at this time of the day. You know what I'm saying? Like, no one's there. You're there. Okay, you're the fanatics. Anyone listening to the show right now has a horrible life. Generally, no friends, basically, no family, nothing in their life but the media. In other words, normal people wouldn't be listening to radio right now. You're not normal if you're listening to talk radio right now. I mean, everyone else is doing something, going to a barbecue with, like, cops in a backyard. I love all the movies that show all the cops in New York are always having barbecues in Wantagh. Like, they all love each other. They're, hey, yeah, and there's always, like, black guys and brown. And like, oh, yeah, and they're kidding about race. They're all friends, sure. Yeah, that's Joe Schmilowitz's view of what goes on in the barbecue. But to me, it's like running a restaurant. Normally, it's full. Now, it's 15% full, 85% empty on a Friday at this time. The stories are horrible. They can break a strong man could break down and cry what Obama did to the country in only 18 months. And this is only the beginning. He's a young man, yet he's strong, he's tall, he's healthy. And he's fanatical. Just think about what's coming tomorrow. If you think he's over, you're finished. If you think him and Rahm Emanuel are finished with you, you have another guest coming for you, to you. I can guarantee you that. So you got the Joe Haystack scandal that follows the Gulf oil disaster, that follows one disaster after another, and it doesn't end. It doesn't end. I have so many other stories I could throw at you. I can't do it to you. Because it is a Memorial Day weekend. I myself am an American who likes to take a time off now and again. So I'm going to enjoy it. It's been raining out in California where I live for 5 days straight, 4.5 days, which I love because it kills the takes the pollen down, reduces the allergies. So I'll go on the boat Saturday, Sunday, maybe Monday, 2 of the 3 days. I'll barbecue on the back of the boat. I got to tell you that. I mean, I'm looking forward to it. And I probably will just do the website. And not pay too much attention to the next scandal of who he's slipping into the country, into the White House. He just put another communist in. A guy funded by George Soros from a company, an organization that's distinctly anti-American, hates capitalism, wants Marxism, just put into the White House by Obama. while you slept, while you're watching basketball. It's unreal to me. So I'll go out on the boat, and while it's still legal to do so, start the engines. And while it's still legal to do so, turn on the electric grill. And while it's still legal to do so, eat a hot dog. And while it's still legal to do so, hug my poodle. Because I have a feeling that eventually poodles will be outlawed in Obama's America as some kind of decadent poodles, something along the lines of a communist revolution, where they're not a working dog. In other words, only working dogs will be allowed. A dog that could, like, pull you to an Obamacare center or pull you to a medical marijuana bailing institution, bailing facility, which conservatives will be forced to work in order to make up for their sins. You'll have to, like, wrap bales of marijuana to distribute in the night. You know what I'm saying? But, oh, please, let me a break. Thank God I don't have, abs like in these ads. Because if I had a body like that with abs like in the ads, I wouldn't be able to have the hot dog this weekend. You see the benefit of not being perfect? If you're not perfect, you can enjoy yourself. Do you know what a stress it is to be perfect? Do you have any idea how hard it is to become perfect? And then it's even harder to remain perfect. So you can't even put on an ounce if you have abs, perfect abs. At age 30, 31, I realized I'm never going to have those washboard abs again. First of all, I don't live in Somalia. That's number one. Number two, I'm not willing to do sit-ups. I hate sit-ups. I hate sit-ups. I still do push-ups. I do arm things, and I bicycle. My body is very, okay, it's hard everywhere except in the center because I won't do sit-ups. I hate them. They actually get me sick. My eyes bulge. My chin hurts me. I don't like sit-ups. They're disgusting. And secondly, I'm going to tell you something else about sit-ups that you don't know about. If you study the Chinese art statues of the famous martial arts statue, you know, of the Chinese guy in a robe holding a big sword. Have you ever studied that in profile? You know what I'm talking about? Like every Chinatown gift shop has one, the martial artist with the beard. He's got a big stomach on him. That's right, because this whole concept of being lean and thin in order to be healthy is a rather modern concept. It's okay to have a bit of a gut. In fact, if you look at, well, I don't want to go into it. You're not interested in any of this. The trick of a tiny belly is not the point of this story.
Savage.
There's a moon out tonight. Let's go strolling. There's a girl in my heart.
It is the Savage Nation blasting out to you on this Memorial Day weekend from high atop a tower in the middle of San Francisco. I just thought I'd let you know what a real radio show should sound like. See, people yell and scream when they really want to sound like they're on the radio. I don't have to do it anymore. I just talk to you. The audience comes, they don't come. The audience isn't there, they're there, whatever. So we got the Joe Haystack story, Admiral Haystack. I don't believe a word he said. See, I'd like to hear Haystack under oath. And I'd like to see the emails between Haystack and Rahm Emanuel and Obama. I'd like to see the chain. But you and I both know that there's no chain. The chain breaks with Rahm Emanuel. I know Bubba was called in after the fact, at least in my estimation. They called Bubba in after the fact, and he became the fall guy because somehow Rahm Emanuel has something on Bubba. Bubba wouldn't have done this otherwise. There's another issue here. If Rahm Emanuel had actually directly done it, and he may have done, and they could prove it, he could go to jail. Remember, people go to jail for lying to the government. But since they are the government, how can they lie to themselves? Look what happened in Chicago with Fitzpatrick, the prosecutor there with Blagojevich, right? One lie and boom, you're finished. So if they got Rahm Emanuel before a real prosecutor, if there are any U.S. attorneys left, I don't know who Obama put in there, probably... he'd probably see if Al Sharpton had some cousins that they could bring in and put him in there, you know, immediately deputize them and give them law degrees in the back of the White House with a special training along the lines of how some of them got their reverend degrees. And they could be the U.S. attorneys for all I know. But if you could prove it was Rahm Emanuel directly to Haystack, Rahm Emanuel, it's over. It's toast. It's jail time. So Bubba comes in. Why? Because he's a private citizen. So it's only a lie. And he's used to it. You know he's a liar. So what's the difference of another lie? Big deal, right? I mean, so it doesn't matter, right? He's tarnished. That's it. So that's why I play this a full moon out, because there is a full moon out where I live, and the skunks are back outside my house. Oh, it's awful. Remember a few years ago, if you're a regular listener, I was plagued by skunks. I called in a Russian trapper. Somehow Russians know how to trap. I don't understand the connection, but they're like from the old country, and they... Well, actually, that was 10 years ago. They could... They're from the old world, and many of them brought in skills that we have forgotten, that type of thing. Guy put out a trap within a day. The poor thing was in the cage for the tuna fish can. Scared to death when he showed it. I said, don't show it to me. He releases it in another over the bridge, and then they run around in the woods there, and then they call him up, and he says, y'all come get him. So then he gets it from there, and they releases it here. I think there's one skunk that's released by the same Russian trapper all over the area. But the skunk comes back, and he poisoned me the other night, 4:30. I almost went, I am so sensitive to that. I couldn't take it. I left the house 4:30 in the morning cursing. I call a guy up, and I said, you got to get the trapper here tomorrow. I can't take it anymore. I'm going crazy. And a trapper comes back again, and here's the trapper now put out the cage. So now I know it's full moon. I know I'm afraid. I'm intimidated to sleep at night. So the tree said to me, it must have been a liberal skunk that's back. Okay, very funny. Everyone's got a joke. I said, okay, I tell the jokes. You hire the trapper. Leave me out of that one. Now, I am going to get to Savage comments on Obama being attacked by the radical left this week over the Gulf oil spill because he failed them in their religion, their nature called religion. I mean, everyone wanted to hear that one, and many of you missed it yesterday. I'm going to take your calls right now, by the way. Where's the girl? Oh, yeah. Chicago, Candace, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Yes, I believe the reason why Obama is here today is because he's like a dog with his tail between his legs, and he comes back to Chicago to wield his power and to show people how much power he has. I live seven blocks.
Oh, that's why he goes there. In other words, he can still high see. In other words, he's still worshipped there.
Yes, and I live several blocks from him, and he has so much military police down here. To me, it seems like visiting Puerto Rico. They're all over the place with their vests, and they tow all the cars. You can't park on the street in any of the commercial areas. It's ridiculous.
Well, he had a lot of power in San Francisco the other night when he appeared at the home of the Gettys. They loved him there. You read about that, right? The $17,000 plate dinner to raise money for Barbara Boxer, the senator from Brooklyn?
It's shameful. Disgusting.
Well, I thought liberals are for... I thought he was going to straight clean up Washington. It wasn't going to be Washington as usual, right? You really believe that? Yeah, from hope and change to dope and strange in 18 months.
Yes, exactly.
Right, have a nice weekend out there. Speaking of the Gettys, it's interesting. I don't... Well, let's start with what I know, okay? Not what I suspect. I think that the Democrat Party is far more corrupt than the Republican Party. Let me say I believe that. And I believe the ties to corruption are greater at the higher levels of the Democrat Party than any time in history. I have for you a confidential file number 100-1202 of the FBI of an investigation entitled John Paul Getty. Did you hear? See, this came to you out of nowhere. I'm giving you a Getty file, because I didn't like the idea that they went to that house and they may believe that they're such wonderful, great Americans, and maybe they are. And I'm not accusing them of anything, but I'm going to give you the facts and nothing but the facts. You draw your own conclusions. FBI file, number 100-1202, investigation of John Paul Getty. It's marked character of case, Espionage G. It opens with a document dated June 26, 1940, addressed to the U.S. attorney and signed by a clerk at the Pierre Hotel, New York. And he wrote, to whom it may concern, I am employed by the above hotel. I am an American born here and feel that there should be an investigation made at the above hotel. About 6 months ago, a few of us heard a conversation which at that time didn't seem very serious. But as time goes on and these conversations still exist, blah, 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 there are quite a few Germans and Italians employed in this hotel and very few of our own country employed, so we haven't very much chance to say anything. If you would care for any information, you could get me at the hotel. So, in other words, it's an employee of the Pierre Hotel, right? And he sends it to the FBI. It's taken seriously by then U.S. Attorney Harold M. Kennedy, who sends the letter on to B.E. Sackett, a special agent of the FBI, because it was the job of the FBI in peace and war to root out the internal enemies of the USA, unlike today. And from these modest beginnings began an intensive three-year investigation into John Paul Getty's affairs, which was fostered by his public support for Hitler's Germany. Now, why am I telling you about ancient history? You figure it out. Getty invited suspicion with his open admiration for Hitler's leadership and by publicly bragging of his friendship with leading Nazis, including Hitler, Goebbels, and Goering. Getty was also reported to be trying to sell oil to Nazi Germany or to the Soviet Union for shipment to Germany, This was, of course, before the German invasion of the USSR. Getty had also invested some of his own money in a German government bond from which he received interest, and he was believed to be associating with suspected Nazi agents, and it goes on, including the German actress Hilde Krüger, who by her own admission had been friendly with Hitler and Goebbels. So why am I telling you all about this? Well, I'll let you figure it out. Just 7 months before Pearl Harbor, the FBI was still reporting that Getty had a close association with Hilde Krüger and that he was selling oil to the Nazis via Mexico. Nothing changes. A former employee told the FBI that Getty had agreed to sell 50,000 barrels to Germany by way of Vladivostok, but the deal fell through when Germany was placed on the blacklist. There's more to the story, but you should also know that some of the art that he bought at a fire sale prices after the art market collapsed in Europe was stolen from German aristocrats and their collections, and some of that art hangs today in the Los Angeles County Museum of Art. Now, what does that story have to do with anything? I'll let you put two and two together, and you'll come up with why we're going through what we're going through today. And it's fair game, and I'll tell you why. The left used to talk about Bush's grandfather and his ties to Germany. Remember that? They kept over and over, Bush's grandfather, Germany, blah, blah, blah. Well, what's good for the goose is good for the gander, so I gave you the rest of the story. At the end of the day, what do you conclude? You conclude that the oligarchy is all out for itself, and that the oligarchy never did and never will care about the people, and that we the people are stuck right now with perhaps the most corrupt administration in American history under the guise of being something different. And the reason there is not a bigger outcry is because the president is 50% black, and anyone who accuses him of anything is called a racist. And so that nullifies 50% of those willing to say a word because they've been intimidated by the PC police into not saying a word about a person of color out of fear of being called a racist. Consequently, he's gotten away with more than anyone with this amount of scandal who would have been white, in plain English, in my opinion. Don't tell me you agree or disagree because I'm giving you my opinion. It's only one man's opinion. That's all there is to it. Now, if a radio show is an opinion show, I'm not the news, by the way. I do find the news that I think is important. I talk about it, and I post it on my website. That's one thing. But basically, it's a show about opinion. Make no mistake about it. Everything you just heard on this show is my opinion. You can decide whether or not you believe me, or you can dismiss it, or you can say, oh, my God, he's right again. After all, wasn't it I this week who said to you that Rahm Emanuel is conveniently hiding in Israel? And the reason he is because of the Joe Haystack issue that's going to come up. And he doesn't want the reporters to hound him over the weekend. How many reporters do you think are going to be allowed to ask Rahm Emanuel a question in Israel, which is a police state? Oh, you didn't know that? They just arrested two Jews in Israel for daring to yell something at Rahm Emanuel. Yell, not touch him, not threaten him, but call him a name. That's right, two religious Jews, meaning two real Jews, as opposed to the fake variety, as opposed to the bagel and lox variety, actually yelled something at Rahm Emanuel along the lines of, how dare you, after stabbing us in the back, come here and want to have a bar mitzvah for your son at the Western Wall. They were arrested for harassing Rahm Emanuel. So you're telling me, you think an American reporter is going to be able to ask him a question? Oh yeah, I'm Yisrael, hi, sure. They'll let that go on in Israel. Good luck. Now, speaking of Israel, there's an article on Michael Savage that you shouldn't miss. The U.S. is training a new Palestinian army. Three-star Lieutenant General Keith Dayton has been working since the takeover of the Gaza Strip by Hamas, building a Palestinian army using special forces troops to train the Palestinians and to supply them with weapons. No. Really? Obama is training a Palestinian army? Well, his middle name wasn't Yasha Heifetz. It wasn't Barack Heifetz Obama. It wasn't Barack Abraham Obama, was it? His middle name was Hussein. So we made an issue of it, and you said we were wrong to do so. Well, all right, so we were wrong. Who's wrong now? Who's wrong now, you schmucks, you? You put your fortune behind this guy, and now you're saying he's delusional? I would say you're delusional, not me. You're the delusional one, that you're so stupid that you were taken in by this act. I wasn't, not for a second. So today we're talking about other things, the Obama. What am I getting so worked up for? What do you care? You don't care anyway. You care more about every website. Gary Coleman this. I don't even know who Gary Coleman is. He was in a sitcom in 1983. every website. What is this? It doesn't end with these people. An actor has a bowel movement. They put it up on every website for 3 years. I don't know, Gary Coleman. Big deal. Why is that major news instead of the Joe Haystack scandal? What, the Gulf oil disaster is over because Gary Coleman dropped dead? Okay, that's it. That's your news. That's why you're burnt out. I'll be back.
Savage.
So, Admiral Seastack, who I affectionately call Joe Haystack, because of his aw shucks attitude, says that he admires Bill Clinton greatly. So we did a little research, and sure enough, he had worked in a high office in the Navy while Bill Clinton was president. And oh, you'd be shocked by that? In other words, it's a seamless, you know, little connection going on there. This is not to diminish what Admiral Seastack accomplished while in the Navy. If you check it out, the guy is the real deal. I mean, he commanded an entire naval group, which has to be one of the most complex, difficult military jobs on earth. I cannot imagine commanding a naval group, to be frank with you. I have enough trouble driving a 40-ton boat by myself and managing everything on that boat. I cannot imagine what it would take to manage a naval, you know, carrier group, but he managed it. But he's a politician at the end of the day, and he knows which side of who butters his bread, so to speak. So now that we know that Clinton's taking the fall for Rahm Emanuel, or at least that's what it looks like to the thinking person, what can the Republicans really do with it? They're going to hold a lame hearing, you know? It's not going to get anywhere, and they know it. The Democrats, outsmarted them. That's why Clinton went to the White House to have lunch with Obama before Obama went to Chicago. They worked out a story where, okay, I'll take it. I did it. It was done before he even got there, because that's why Rahm Emanuel suddenly had a bar mitzvah in Israel. It all fits together, you know. Who, Aldous Huxley wrote it, or somebody, that life has to be lived forward, but can only be understood backward? Did you ever read that one when you were young? Well, I did. Life must be lived forward, but it can only be understood backward. It's the same in politics. Politics can only be understood in retrospect. And you have to put the pieces together. First, Rahm Emanuel goes to Israel on a bar mitzvah tour. So you say, all right, well, okay, his son is 13. Then, all of a sudden, the Haystack thing blows up. Then, all of a sudden, shock out from left field, or comes Bill Clinton. I did it. I did it. I have the stain on my dress. I'm the one who did it. See, why would he do this? What? How does this make sense? Well, because Bill Clinton is a private citizen. You can't touch him. Boom. They checkmated the Republicrats again. So here we are. That's all. It's all politics. What's the big... You expect honesty and truth? What are you watching, Superman reruns or what? I mean, where are you going to get honesty and truth? Superman reruns, or you're going to see honesty and truth in the American way. That's about it these days. Or perhaps the guy with the chalk and the dunce cap and the blackboard would lead you to believe that he's Superman. I don't lead you to believe that. I'm as imperfect as the next man. The difference is that I don't claim to be a politician. I am a talk show host. Sitting at my desk is a paperweight by Weems and Plath. I shouldn't have given the name. What the hell? Why did I give him a free plug? And it's a wonderful one. I have one that's a compass. Now I got a bunch. This one is a thermometer. You know, I'm obsessed with temperature. Wherever I am, I like to know the exact temperature within a 2-degree spread. This started, by the way, this phobia about temperature, long before Al Gore was born. I had a thing about temperature. I'm within a certain frame. It's like a certain plant will thrive by the seashore, but you move it inland 100 yards, doesn't do well, or it can't grow at all. I'm that kind of plant. I'm very sensitive to temperature. I like around 65 to 68. Any higher than that, it's already schwitz time, Yankee Stadium, July 4th, bandana on the neck. I want to go home. I got a suntan and my eyes hurt, and the hot dog and the glove, nothing works. I want to go. Joe DiMaggio, goodbye. If it is below a certain temperature, well, it does. Low temperatures don't bother me. I think there's a bit of the Inuit in me. How, I don't know. I can't piece this together. Genetically, I could probably figure this one out, but there's something about ice cold that I like, that I don't like about heat. I think humans can survive more in the in lower than in higher, right, Al Gore? Because he's got that backwards. He's a little dyslexic. See, Gore was right about something, but he was wrong about global warming. He knew that there was a cataclysm coming, but he had it completely backwards, as usual. It's not a global warming that's coming. It's global cooling, according to all estimates, which occurred between about the 13th century and the 19th century. Global cooling gave a little hit. And half of Europe went into starvation, and the wars occurred as a result of global cooling. So Gore knew something was coming. The only thing is he got it wrong, and he panicked everybody. And, you know, you smear off enough fake scientists, you could prove anything in the world today. Do you really want to talk about Joe Haystack, Hillary Clinton, Bill Clinton, Joe Obama, Barack Obama, whatever, boating, hot dogs? I do not like tofu hot dogs. I told you that 2 weeks ago. The most disgusting thing ever invented are tofu hot dogs. You know, it's like an ersatz hot dog. If you're going to eat it already. You know what I learned in graduate school getting my PhD at Berkeley? I know I'm not supposed to mention it. You get offended if I say it. You know what I learned in graduate school while getting my PhD in human nutrition at Berkeley? I had a professor. She was very smart. She said, we never pay attention to individual meals. That's good. It's dispensation. In other words, if you're going to go out this weekend, for God's sakes, enjoy yourself. Have what the heck you want. Okay, if you do it every day, if every day you say, I don't pay attention to individual meals, then you're lying to yourself. But once in a while, for God's sakes, God, young men, 30 years old, running, wear wristwatches, lean, body mass, pinching their stomachs in the bathroom, having, you know, sex with their wives 1.2 times per week because they read it in Men's Health. I never saw anything like this. Obsessed. Son, let me tell you something. Can I tell you the truth? Give it up already. You're not going to live forever no matter what you do. And once in a while, you can have that potato chip. And once in a while, you can have that hot dog. You know what I mean?
Savage.
Warning. The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
Now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Democrats just put Toomey over the finish line. They blew the Haystack affair, too, by the way. Am I on the air here, or is this an open mic? I'm joking, of course. I make it sound that way. I want people to think I'm talking to you. No, I'm looking at this. This is just crazy. Here we are, Memorial Day weekend. Obama's running away from his responsibilities as president by not going to Arlington. Rahm Emanuel's hiding in Israel. By the way, you know, I think, who was the other one who was hiding in Israel? Maya Lansky. That's right. Oh, no, that has nothing to do with it. But Lansky fled to Israel, too, and they wouldn't take him in. You think that he's seeking asylum in Israel? Are you going to stay there permanently or come back to face the Haystack affair? Anyway, you know the whole deal. This is the biggest story that's going on out there. But all this does, really, is push the Republican Toomey over the finish line. Someone says, how do you make something out of nothing? By acting guilty when you're innocent. Now, how better to act guilty than to bring Bill Clinton in and say he did it? Even the average schmuck who's watching basketball says something's wrong with that picture. So Fox News yesterday, Major Garrett asked about the CSTAG job offer, and the president would say a response is coming out shortly on that issue, right? So what happened? All of a sudden, Clinton pops up again. I did it. Something's wrong with this picture. Bad PR, yes. Corrupt, yes. Actionable, maybe. So why talk about it? What am I going to do, beat this one to death? No doubt, although the Democrats shot themselves in the foot, the Republicans are such incompetent guys that they're going to blow it anyway. They wouldn't know how to handle it. So we sit here and watch this thing. Napolitano goes from oil spills to the opera, says Drudge. What is that? Why is that a big deal? The girl's the woman's entitled to go to the opera. She goes to the opera where? A night at the opera in the president's seats, of course. A well-known fan of the stage. Oh, I can say I could spend a day talking about Napolitano at the opera. Napolitano was a VIP guest at the Washington National Opera Ball at the Russian Federation Embassy last Friday. A luxurious event that featured Fabergé egg cakes, 30,000 pounds worth of ice sculptures, and Russian ballerinas and singers bringing in 1.5 mil for the opera. If that's not furtherance of what I've been saying to you about that we're living through the age of the Romanovs, I'd like to know what is. The homeland boss says she's been to all the company, so she likes the opera. Isn't it better than her, like Janet Reno with the pickup truck with the green fake rug in the back? What was that called? AstroTurf. I mean, I'd rather have a Homeland Security Secretary who likes an opera better than a pickup truck. You know what I mean? What would you rather see, that she goes to a bowling alley at night with her friends? Why is this a story? As governor, Napolitano was a frequent patron of Arizona's opera. Good for her. I think this is actually hopeful that she likes the opera. You got Rigoletto for me. I want you to play Rigoletto for the one piece that I like. Is it Rigoletto that I like where he cries, the clown? Rigoletto, the clown? It is Rigoletto. Pagliacci. I want to hear Pagliacci. Not Rigoletto. I just want to hear the laughter, the broken tears. I lost already, 10% of the audience is gone already in the first stanza. This is so hard. It doesn't. The average American hates this. They can't stand it. They'd actually trust Napolitano more if she went to a ball game than to the opera. I like Napolitano more now. In fact, I'm going to make an open offer here. I would go to the opera any day as Napolitano's a date. You know, I mean, in a sense of friendship. I would go to the opera any day of the week with Napolitano to watch an opera. I had no idea she had such inclinations. I'm thrilled to find it out. I trust her more now. If I had heard she was into the pickup trucks and the AstroTurf, I would have, this is terrific. This is terrific. I don't see anything wrong with it anyway, by the way. What she went to a Russian thing with Fabergé eggs and ice sculptures that cost millions of dollars and Russian ballerinas and singers. What's wrong with that? We're in the last days of the empire, the last days of the Romanov Empire. That's all. What's the difference? I don't know why they make... See, this doesn't make sense to me. Pennsylvania Jane, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Mike, this is one of those people that called you today because she has no friends, no family.
You heard me. A lot of people didn't understand I was pulling their leg. You probably don't have friends or family, though, in your case.
I hope that's not true. But
No, I was just joking. I was saying anyone who listens to radio at this hour on a Memorial Day weekend is probably without a life. So what makes you call right now?
Okay, I wanted to ask you how you have sex 1.5 times.
No, it's 1.2 times a week, I said, is the average.
1.5.
Well, I'll let you figure the details out. This is a family show. No, I was making a bigger point, which is that a lot of guys in their 30s start to become obsessed about living forever, and they're worried about a little gray hair and a little flabbiness and the fat index, whatever, and they start exercising, and everything is controlled. The amount of fat, carbohydrate, protein, this, that, milkshakes, how much vitamin they take and how much they run. And I said they have sex 1.2 times a week with their wife. It was meant as an average. You understand what I mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
So let's say it averages out to once a week, 5 weeks, for 5 weeks of the month. That's 1.2 if you do the math. Also, I'm joking. It doesn't average out to 1.2. But you could have sex 1.2 times a week, actually, Jane, when you think about it. How hard is that to figure out? Once you do it normal, and then another time, you only do it for 20%. You see, I'm on a roll here. What also, do you prefer on a roll, by the way, butter or Smart Balance? Thanks for the call. 1-800-449-82. What do you think Obama has on Clinton? Because something doesn't make sense here. Now, it was Hillary who took the files, the FBI files, but did they automatically get transferred? Oh, I'm Yisrael High. I'm Yisrael High. Hey, do you have the Hatikva in honor of Rahm Emanuel's trip to Israel? Play the Israeli national anthem in honor of Rahm Emanuel's visit to the Western Wall, to a sensitive archaeological site that's closed to the public for having a bar mitzvah for his son. So they say ultra. It's not the national anthem. It's close, all right. It's klezmer music. Klezmer music disgusts me, by the way. It's the music of the beaten Jew in Poland. I never liked klezmer music. That's like American views of Jews. They should play stupid music like that. It's like Woody Allen, they think, is a Jew. You know what I'm saying? Don't get me started on this topic. You know, it's like triggering something in me that gets me mad. I don't want to go down this road. Do you actually have the hatik for the actual music? All right. No, of course not, because you're not oriented in that direction. But if I asked you for the original music of the Horst Wessel, you could find that in a second, couldn't you?
Joe and Paul, a store of Fargenigen, Bravilla, Joe and Paul, that wet your bully kriegen, Bravilla, suit, a coat, a geeten, zole, perfect, a feten, daft hier, kuifen, Norba, Joe and Paul.
Oh, God in heaven. It's like the last days of Pompeii on the Savage Nation tonight. Oh, my God. What if I said to you, like, I'm leaving radio in a week and I'm just going to do everything I ever wanted to do? Well, guess what? That's what I've been doing for 16 years. Oh, I run every show as though it's my last. I never thought I'd last three shows. When I first started radio, they said, you'll never last because your accent is too New York. That was a code word. I said, okay, you'll never last because you're too conservative in a liberal city, okay? You'll never last because you're too blunt, okay? You'll never last because you hang up on callers, etc. Well, guess who's laughing now? I outlasted them all. And I've only just begun. But it is like the last. I love shows on nights like this. I love them because it's like before the holiday, you get giddy. You know, it's like a holiday weekend and it's funny. That song is so funny, that Joe and Paul song. It was way before my time in New York, but there used to be, I'll give you the background if I know it even myself. There used to be a station in New York City, a radio station. Remember, everyone in my generation grew up on radio, which is why I'm the best in radio, because I actually grew up on radio. You didn't know that. It's the reason I have a natural gift for radio is I grew up listening to the Green Hornet. I actually heard Walter Winchell as a child, so I know what radio is, but the point is, yes, I used to fall asleep in my father's lap listening to radio, not television. Would you believe that? He'd be smoking those, God bless him, Dad, I'm not going to ridicule you up in heaven. I won't do it. God bless you and Jerome and Mom. I wouldn't do it. It's all with fondness. I would fall asleep on his lap. He would smoke the Philip Morris, unfiltered, maybe a two-packer. I'd get the secondhand smoke as a youngster. It didn't affect me. All that nonsense about secondhand smoke. Only the shyster lawyers invented that it hurts you. What, are you crazy? I can go into this, but I don't want to get into the mechanical details or the biomedical facts of that they have upside down. And I'd fall asleep in his lap. He'd be smoking the Philip Morris. We'd be listening to the radio, either the Green Hornet. You got the Green. See, you should have injected the Green Hornet so they know what I'm talking about. Let me hear the Green Hornet. Go ahead.
The biggest of all games. Public enemies who try to destroy our America.
All right, laugh. Could it be that I'm brainwashed from the Green Hornet? Public enemies who try to destroy America. Hello? If that's not a perfect opening to the Savage Nation, the problem is there are so many it's futile. In fact, there's no one to report them to when you find them. What are you going to call? Are you going to call an agency up? Hello, I got a public enemy to report. Who is it? It's you, you son of a gun. You're the one who's done it to him. Yeah, right, I'm going to report it to who? There's no one to report it to anymore. You think there's a higher authority? Yeah, right, sure. That's right. One is in Israel. The other's in Chicago. The other one, we don't know where he is. And the third one is somewhere off with baby Rebozo. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. So are there any good movies out there? Christina Barcelona, Woody Allen. I hate Woody Allen's politics. I can't stand what he's done for the image of the Jewish people. He's destroyed it for 100 years. But he's a brilliant director. It's a very funny movie. I didn't like them working in the girl-girl thing. So don't take children to it. And if you're worried about the because they work it in the middle. He's very, very, very sneaky, you know. I think he's got forked mind, frankly. WR, New York. Amy, welcome to the Savage Nation. What's on your mind, Amy?
Oh, hi, Michael. I wanted to let you know that I got over my liberal mental disorder. I was born and raised in Marin County.
No, you were born here? You're actually a person born here? I thought only Miwok Indians were born here.
I was born, I was moved to Marin at 3 months old, born in, okay. Raised in San Rafael, very
yes.
liberal family, but I didn't know that I was liberal until I married my husband, is born and raised in San Francisco, an old Italian family.
Yeah.
And he pointed out to me, he said, you're not accountable, what are you saying? You're always spinning, you're not accountable, and I didn't realize what kind of a disorder I had until my sister and I argued all the time. I thought, my God, I sound like this. I don't make any.
What do you mean? You didn't even know that you had been programmed as a lib.
That's correct. And what happened is, my father and I had a political discussion about a month ago, and he said, "I'm a socialist." I said,
oh.
"What? I didn't know I was living among." See,
Marin County, God!
Now.
Oh God! Now let me ask you something before we take a quick break. Your father's a socialist. Is he a man of means or is he poor?
No, he's not a man of means. He's a professional commercial artist. And
don't get started. Yeah, all of them are disgruntled. Whenever they don't make money, they want to be a socialist. They're going to get even with the rich. So he lives in Marin County and hates anybody with a better car and a better wife and a better pair of shoes?
Well, here's the thing, though. All of my relatives were very, very wealthy, multimillionaires. And every summer...
Well, that explains it. He's embittered. Oh, I got it. You're a live one. Stay on the line. I'll be right back. U.S. training new Palestinian army even while Rahm Emanuel is there. The Israelis are furious at him, the real Jews who believe in the nation. They know that Jerusalem is indivisible, and they know that, as a matter of fact, Rahm Emanuel is trying to cut Jerusalem in half. And so they shout at him, and they're arrested for it. So if you think that that's a valid way to run a government, then you belong in the Soviet Union. It doesn't exist anymore. But Israel is a police state. And so this is what you want in America, where you can't yell at a politician? That's what goes on in Israel? So there it is. New York, Amy, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead again.
Yeah, we were talking about liberal, the mental disorder that I got over. It took me a long time to know that I was that way.
Yeah, so where are you now? In New York or Marin or where?
We live in upstate New York, and it's a very liberal area.
Oh, I don't want to hear the long story. Don't give me the long. You're in upstate New York. Isn't that semi-liberal as well, super semi-liberal with all of the displaced New Yorkers?
Yes, yes. There are a lot of displaced New Yorkers up here.
Yeah, they all go up there and play at country, don't they?
They do. They do. Well, we live in right outside of Albany. So
yeah, but it's very much like Marin County, the same attitudes. You can't get a good bagel here, right? No matter where you are. You can't get a good cup of coffee here, right? That's the first thing you hear.
Yeah, no, you can't.
Well, I'm saying that's the symbol right away. The minute you hear you can't get a good cup of coffee, you can guarantee that they have an Obama sticker somewhere inside their barn.
No, there's plenty of Obama stickers around here.
Oh, God, they'll never learn, will they? So that's the story. There's no getting away from it. It's everywhere. The creeping socialism is everywhere. We're flat out of time. When I come back, the religion piece I promised you. The religion.
Savage.
Everybody on the left agrees that the environment is sacred. It's become their new religion. Gaia is their religion. It's not the religion of Jesus Christ. It's not the religion of Abraham, Moses. It's the religion of Gaia. And fundamentally, they're nature worshippers. And now their sacred idols, the birds, the clams, the shrimp, every mollusk in the bay, and rightly so, is threatened. Their little icons, the icons of this religion of Gaia, this nature worship religion, all the icons of the religion are being decimated because the government did nothing. And so even they have to say something, and they're activated. Their switches are turned on. And that's why there was a press conference, because he was getting the feedback. He didn't give a rat's behind what they thought in Louisiana, a bunch of cracker fishermen, he figured, who voted for McCain anyway. What does he need him for? He knew it was not a state that would go for the socialist state again. Jindal, after all, is a Republican, for God's sakes. So they figure, write him off. Now, of course, if a whale, a nursing whale, let's say, had burped in San Francisco Bay and some of the mammalian milk from the whale had spilled ashore off the Cliff House, I can guarantee you there would have been hysteria in the White House, and they would have been out there in Air Force One, and they would have been firing, like ray beams at it to try to disperse the whale milk. But this was not in his backyard. These were guys from Deliverance Country, mixed in with some, Cajuns who didn't even speak English, he figured. Toothless guys that he saw in a movie that scared him called Deliverance. So what does he have to go down there for? All of a sudden, his own minions are saying, but wait a minute, nature's sacred. The icons of my religion are being decimated by the oil. You have to do something. Get up there, say something. The icon of the illiberal left is the environment. That's their religion. And the clams and the oysters and the shells, the oil of mollusks and the seabirds naturally becomes issues, icons, iconic for them. And they're dying. And they're going to be dying for a long time to come. And they have to say the federal government didn't do enough or did it too slowly or failed them. In other words, they failed them with their religion. And it's Obama who was their messiah, who was supposed to lead them across the Red Sea. These guys believed in him so much that they thought this guy could part the Red Sea. Do you understand that? He promised them so much, and they're so gullible. They are so gullible, the radical left in this country, and there must be an awful lot of them, that they thought he could part the Red Sea and lead them to the promised land. Well, not only could he not part the Red Sea, the man couldn't even stop the Black Sea from oozing. And so now they're finally waking up and they're asking the questions and they're writing the columns. And I believe that this could be the downfall not only of Obama but the entire left wing of the Democrat Party, if not the Democrat Party itself.
Savage.
So that was Savage's segment on the religion of the environment from yesterday that a lot of people asked for. It's also, the audio is up on michaelsavage.com, and with many other good stories. I don't think anyone is going to miss a lot of this. Chicago, Lorna, welcome to the Savage Nation. Go ahead, please.
Dr. Savage, I'd like to know, for people like Soros, people who have a lot of money, what is the attraction to socialism?
I am so glad you asked it, because most people are confused by it. They assume that the poor are naturally communists or socialists in that they are promised the spoils of the rich, right? So yeah. You ask yourself, why did the super rich work so hard to gain control over a population? The answer is because, in my opinion, there are a certain breed of communists, and that is the Leninist school of communism, where they believe a ruling elite shall rule with no feedback or talk back from the people. They want absolute power, and they don't want any people's courts. They don't want any people's opinions. They don't want any people's press to interfere with their machinations. And so the best way to do it is through a dictatorial system. And that fits like a hand in a glove with your question, I think, doesn't it?
Yes, why do people... Why do they claim to be, like, nice, good people?
Because that's how they get the gullible, useful idiots to go along with what they're doing. As they're seizing absolute power, as they're denying us our fundamental liberties, as they're trampling on the Constitution, they say the opposite. That's why they picked an Obama. It was so clever. The man claims to be a constitutional scholar, although no one's ever seen anything he's written. And so you say, well, at least he respects the Constitution. It's the same way that you thought, because Rahm Emanuel was an Israeli, his father was Israeli, that he would protect Israel. It turned out he was the exact opposite. The Israelis got screwed even worse than if an anti-Semite had taken the position. Rahm Emanuel, in other words, was able to do things to Israel that an outright anti-Semite never could have gotten away with. It's the same with Obama. Obama's already trampled on our freedoms to an extent that if a guy came along and said, I'm going to trample on the freedoms, he never would have been able to get away with it. You understand?
Why don't the Jews rise up against them?
Which Jews? Where?
The Jews here, the Jewish people here, the Jewish people.
Well,
here.
I've been reading reports that the big Jewish donors to the Democrat Party, which is almost an oxymoron because it's a hand-in-glove thing, but the largest Jewish donors to the Democrat Party woke up about 6 or 8 weeks ago to Obama, and they started to say that Obama was delusional. That's the exact word that some of them were using. And when I read that, I said, yeah, they're the delusional ones, not Obama. They're delusional if they thought that someone whose middle name was Hussein would be a friend of Israel.
Well,
thank you for the call. Head of Marxist-led Institute just joined the Obama team. It's from the WorldNet Daily. I posted it. The policy director at a George Soros-funded Marxist-founded organization calling itself Free Press has just taken a key State Department position under Hillary Clinton. You're not going to believe this. Take a look at this man's face. And once you look at this guy's face, you'll know what you're in for. If you think this is a nice man, if you think this man wants your freedom, you're right. He wants to take your freedom away from you. That's how I see it. Hillary Clinton is in the air again because I said something earlier, and I wonder whether you agree with me. I said Bubba came along and said that he did it, not Rahm Emanuel. So he's covering for Obama and Rahm. He takes the fall. But he also is interfering with Hillary's political ambitions. Incidentally, once again, he has sabotaged Hillary Clinton. Now, you well know that during Hillary's run to the White House, she claimed, or it was alleged by people in the press, that Bill Clinton, by popping up continuously, was in essence sabotaging his wife. We talked about it. Remember a few years ago? Well, he's doing it again. I believe that he's doing this again, and I believe that there's another element of jealousy again, because she has a political future, he doesn't. And it could be that these people really have a War of the Roses going on. This goes on forever, but we're caught up in this petty drama over and over again. We, the American people, have to watch this game. San Diego, Andrew, your opinion, please go ahead.
Hey, Dr. Savage. when this SysTech story first broke, it made me really think, could he really be that stupid as to talk to the press? And then when Bill Clinton got involved, when I heard about it this morning, it made me think, why would Clinton help Obama in any way, shape, or form?
Yeah, and what did you conclude?
I concluded that I think Hillary's behind it for her own presidential ambitions. If they can bring Obama down with this, then she has a clear shot in 2012.
Oh, my God. So you see it the other way.
I do.
Well, that's an interesting hypothesis. I won't rule it out, but let's think about this logically. Bill Clinton has lunch with Obama yesterday, correct?
Correct.
And they get their stories straight. Rahm Emanuel's hiding in Israel under the guise of the bar mitzvah, correct?
Correct.
But Rahm Emanuel fled to Israel a week ago, so it was already set in motion for him to use the bar mitzvah in Israel as a cover to not be here for the press, right? So I don't know that this is I don't think that your hypothesis is as valid as you may think. In other words, how could they get Rahm Emanuel to leave?
Well, I don't. But my question is, whenever the Clintons get involved, they do it for themselves. And what?
Yeah, but how could they force Rahm Emanuel to get out of town when they know the scandal was about to blow like the derrick blew down there and the rig blew in the Gulf, the rig blew, and so did this scandal at about the same time this is blown up in their faces.
Right, and I think Emanuel had to get out of town. Because he was behind it as well. But I think that...
Well, let's start with who you think actually told C-Stack to get out of the race. Bill Clinton or C-Stack?
I think it was the White House, as C-Stack said, unless he's lying or he's that stupid. But
Think it was Rahm Emanuel telling C-Stack, I'll give you a job if you get out of the race?
That is correct. And
all right.
Because of this high...
So Bill Clinton now comes in and says, I did it. So how does that benefit... you say it doesn't benefit the Clintons, or you say it does? You say it does because it weakens Obama?
Because it weakens Obama and puts the Clinton blue dress back on, it puts it on Obama.
Oh, you mean the whole soiled Clinton thing is back again. All right, but it weakens Hillary in that regard. That's what I'm saying. It besmirches Hillary, who's been trying to polish her her image with the Secretary of State stuff. You know, the trips and the dinners and the this and the that. She's trying to get away from the whole Arkansas blue dress thing. Well, I guess you could take it either way, right? Gone. That's so they cut him off. They put him back in the asylum. They let him out for one phone call, and then they hung the phone. Once you're in the middle of a conversation, you don't know if it was drug rehab or a prison. You don't know where the call came from. That's the beauty of talk. And I take it seriously. I get involved like he's my best friend, and we're in a seminar, in a PhD seminar. Where do I know where he's calling from? It could be a bug house where the meds were, where it was spat out in a whole closet, and he ran to make a phone call in the hall. So, I don't know. You don't know where anyone's calling from. But I take everyone on their word if they get through old Doug. I assume that they got a reason to call, but Doug, where was that call from? Trace it quickly. No, we can't trace calls. People don't know in talk. We cannot trace calls, nor do we do so at all. Never. And they're not, you know, many people fear that. I bet no one thought about that. I never even gave it a thought. No, the government's not listening. No, we don't send your numbers. We don't know anybody who's calling, whatever. I know you're calling now, though, because everyone's excited about the Joe Haystack story. And Rahm says Bill did it, but I don't know. To me, it looks like, I was the only one in the media who said Rahm in Israel. I put two and two together the other day, and I said he's hiding from the press because it's going to turn out he's involved with the C-Stack thing. Remember? But I didn't know that they'd come up with a trick that Bill did it. I actually thought C-Stack was a straight arrow, being an admiral, and he'd come out and say, no, Bill Clinton's lying. In fact, it was Rahm Emanuel. I actually thought that could happen today. But then I looked a little more deeply, and I saw that C-Stack is a very fine naval officer. Don't take that away from him. Commanded a carrier battle group. Has to be one of the brightest and the best in the Navy, okay? But he's also a politician who served under Bill Clinton when he was suddenly moved into the political realm of the Navy. So they know each other very well, and it goes back a long time. This is not, you know, out of the blue all of a sudden that, yes, I respect Mr. Clinton, that we speak every once in a while, Bull. No, sir. This is a hand-in-glove situation. But I really don't know how the American people are going to take to seeing Bill Clinton again all of a sudden involved in a scandal. There's a clear scandal here. And the minute Bill Clinton appears, they know there's a scandal. Even if they didn't think there was one, there is one now. So the question is, why would Bill Clinton, as politically savvy as he is, do this right now? Who benefits and who loses? That's the real question. Is this more damaging to Hillary, or is it more damaging to Obama? Now, no one's asked that subtle question. They immediately assume it's a question of how badly is Obama going to be damaged by Bill Clinton making this statement. I think the real question is, who's going to be more damaged, Obama or Hillary? And I'll let you decide. I'll be back.
Savage.
No one's talking about Arlen Specter, by the way, the disgraced senator. You know, the Benedict Arnold of American politics. What's he going to do with the rest of his life? These guys go on forever. You know, him and the biggest shock was not Arlen Specter's face. He did look stunned after he lost. It was Mrs. Specter. She could not believe that finally the party was over, the people wouldn't be catering to her anymore. You know what this one, the Yenta, went through all her life. Yes, Mrs. Specter. Certainly, Mrs. Senator Specter. Whatever you say, Mrs. Specter. Certainly, Mrs. Specter. Would you like your feet rubbed, Mrs. Specter? You want the Fabergé egg with your breakfast now, Mrs. Specter? Yes, Mrs. Specter. Certainly, Mrs. Specter. Right this way. Come in the restaurant, Mrs. Specter. Now it's like, Mrs. Specter, I'm sorry, the table is full. In 2 weeks, it'll be who? Mrs. Who? I'm sorry, we don't know who you are. That's it. You have no idea what it did to her. See, this is the beauty of life, is that Lin Yutang wrote in The Importance of Living, life consists of getting your hair cut every 2 weeks and watching your neighbor fall off the roof. Now, what he meant by watching your neighbor fall off the roof wasn't literally watching your neighbor fall off the roof. It meant seeing people who were once high and mighty slipping. We love it. We, the people, get our pleasure. We get our rocks off, in essence, by seeing the rich and powerful fall from grace. Madoff is in jail, for example. Madoff is probably wearing a wig and high heels right now, and he's too old for that. I don't know, maybe sewing someone's you know, briefs. Who knows what he's doing there? Reading law books for people. I don't know, maybe he's delivering Hebrew National. You don't know what he's doing in the jail. But, you know, when you see a guy riding high, all of a sudden they sold off the this, the that, you get a pleasure out of it. It's not because you're a vicious person. It's because you're a human being, and human beings actually get pleasure in seeing the high and mighty fall. That's the truth. I see it's very fashionable now amongst a certain guy on television who uses a blackboard with chalk who never went to college because he subliminally wants to be a professor. Now he's suddenly glorifying every ethnic group in the world that formed America. They were originally Americans. It wasn't George Washington. No, it wasn't George Washington. Somebody else. His next act is going to be he's going to discover that he has both African-American and Latino roots. I can, as sure as I'm standing here, Ham is going to say he discovered through a genealogical search in Israel, through a certain Iron Mountain record kept secret in the Mormon world, that actually his ancestor on his grandmother's side is related to Yasha Heifetz's grandmother, who they met in the bakery in Koblenz. And that not only is he part Hispanic and part African-American, but Jewish as well. You watch. I can predict things. That's going to come from the guy on Fox with the blackboard and chalk. Because he's got nowhere to go anymore. He's put himself too far out on a limb. Zelig cannot do anything but discover his roots. Go much deeper than you may think, that he's not really just a mean old white guy conservative. And that could happen. There's no question that that could happen. New York City, WR, Patricia, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Michael, with regards to this SESTAC situation, I'm seeing it from a different perspective. I see Rahm Emanuel stabbing the president in the back.
I'm trying to follow on a late Friday before Memorial Day. I'm thinking of hot dogs in a boat. How is that possible? Why would Rahm Emanuel be his Brutus?
Well, the thing is, he goes to Clinton, who is an ex-president who's been impeached and disbarred. Therefore, his credibility is not good.
Right. In other words, he's soiled goods already. Okay. He says to him, you got nothing to lose. No one trusts you anyway except the old women in Boca Raton. So you did it. So how does that hurt anybody?
Well, the way it does is, see, he brokers the deal. Now, that's like getting a guy to broker a deal to commit a murder.
But how does that stab Obama? How does Rahm Emanuel hurt Obama by doing that?
Because the man in charge is supposed to know what the most important people next to him are doing.
It shows he wasn't even in charge, that he didn't know what was going on around him.
And therefore, a conspiracy...
Oh, so it undermines Obama again.
And a conspiracy is a crime.
So how does Rahm Emanuel gain by that?
Rahm Emanuel, I believe, has no lost love with this president. That's my personal...
So you think Rahm Emanuel was put in there in order to... further Israel's power, when in fact Obama is no friend of Israel, and because Rahm Emanuel lost face with his friends in Israel, he got even with Obama? Is that another theory?
Yes, I believe that is absolutely true, and also Obama did not live up to Emanuel's expectations. So Emanuel's got nothing to lose because he goes way back with the Clintons.
Oh my God. You see how deep this goes? This is very interesting. It's fascinating, and I don't think it's over. I think it's just begun. Even though they dropped it on our doorstep on a Friday before Memorial Day weekend, I do believe that the Joe Haystack story definitely has a hay wagon that's going to roll right through October. I think that the Haystack hay wagon is going to be rolling right through the elections. It's the Savage Nation.
Savage.
Warning, The Michael Savage Show contains adult language, adult content, psychological nudity. Listener discretion is advised.
And now, America's most exciting radio talk show, The Savage Nation. Here is Michael Savage.
Now listen up.
President Clinton had called me last summer, and I just didn't feel it was right for me to talk about that conversation with him.
Well, it came out today that Michael Savage was the only one in the media who got it right, and I was ahead of the pack again. Didn't I say to you that Rahm Emanuel may have been responsible for making a job offer to Congressman Joe Sestak in exchange for dropping out of the Pennsylvania Senate race? Remember I said that to you, that Rahm Emanuel was strangely absent, hiding in Israel at a so-called bar mitzvah, while the Gulf oil spill scandal was growing? It's unheard of. I said he's only a plane ride away. He could have been back in a minute to help Obama, his boss, but he's nowhere to be seen because he didn't want to answer to the press. Okay? So who was right? Me. I said it was Rahm Emanuel who was responsible for making a job offer to Sestak. Well, it turns out that according to the planted story in the Washington Post, former president that almost impeached Bill Clinton was tasked by White House Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel to make such an approach to Sestak. Now, I don't know whether to believe any of this. In other words, I don't believe that I have to believe that it was Bill Clinton as the basically the gopher. Why would Bill Clinton subject himself to being a gopher is the question. Bill Clinton likes to pose as some kind of world statesman, and now he's reduced to being basically a bag man for Obama? Something's wrong with the picture. I told you there was more going on in Rahm Emanuel's visit to Israel than just his son's bar mitzvah. I suggested that he had gone to Israel specifically to avoid press questions about the Sestak issue. And today, we found out that Rahm Emanuel is, as I predicted, right in the middle of this scandal. It seems that Bill Clinton was used by Rahm Emanuel and the White House in order to avoid prosecution for blatantly unethical and illegal act. I don't believe they can prosecute Clinton because he's no longer in office, although that is debatable. One of the many bizarre things about the situation is the fact that Bill Clinton willingly acted as the bag man in this exchange. Why would Bill Clinton risk his reputation to be a courier for Rahm Emanuel in this dirty political game? Does Rahm Emanuel have even more power than we thought? Does Rahm Emanuel have more power than Bill Clinton? Does Rahm Emanuel know something about Clinton that we don't know? Because by doing this, he's further damaged his own reputation. But now here's the curveball. He's also effectively destroyed Hillary's chances of ever becoming president. Just as Bill sabotaged her chances during the campaign, he has now sabotaged her again. And what about Joe Sestak? Because of his aw shucks manner, I'm going to call Joe Haystack Joe Haystack. And I think Joe Haystack knows far more than he's saying. Joe Haystack even claimed today that he's a big admirer of Bill Clinton. But it'd be interesting to see if anywhere in his career, this captain got by with a little help from his friends, the Clintons. The Obama-Clinton-Emanuel connection. Remember where you heard it first, right here on the Savage Nation. This has been an incredible couple of days for news. Did you hear some of the questions that were asked of Obama about the oil spill at the press conference? Here's Jake Tapper, who won't be tapping at the White House door much longer.
You say that everything that could be done is being done. But there are those in the region and those industry experts who say that's not true. Governor Jindal obviously had this proposal for a barrier. They say that if that had been approved when they first asked for it, they would have 10 miles up already. There are fishermen down there who want to work, who want to help, haven't been trained, haven't been told to go do so. There are industry experts who say that they're surprised the tankers haven't been sent out there to vacuum, as was done in 93 outside Saudi Arabia. And then, of course, there's the fact that there are 17 countries that have offered to help, and it's only been accepted from two countries, Norway and Mexico. How can you say that everything that can be done is being done with all these experts and all these officials saying that's not true?
And here's Obama answering a completely different question than the one asked.
If the question is, Jake, are we doing everything perfectly out there? Then the answer is absolutely not. We can always do better. If the question is, are we, each time there is an idea, evaluating it and making a decision, is this the best option that we have right now? based on how quickly we can stop this leak and how much damage can we mitigate, then the answer is yes.
And here's Chuck Todd asking if the oil spill should be compared to Katrina.
It seems that you've made the case on the technical issues, but onshore, mm-hmm. Admiral Allen admitted the other day in the White House briefing that they needed to be pushed harder. Mm-hmm. Senator Mary Landrieu this morning said it's not clear who's in charge, that the government should be in charge. Why not ask BP to simply step aside on the onshore stuff, mm-hmm. make it an entirely government thing? Obviously, BP pays for it, but why not ask them to just completely step aside on that front? And then also, mm-hmm. can you respond to all the Katrina comparisons that people are making about this with yourself?
And here's Obama giving a legalistic answer.
I'll leave it to you guys to make those comparisons and make judgments on it, because what I'm spending my time thinking about is how do we solve the problem. And when the problem is solved and people look back and do an assessment of all the various decisions that were made, I think people can make a historical judgment. And I'm confident that people are going to look back and say that this administration was on top of what was an unprecedented crisis. In terms of shoreline protection, has been set up under the Oil Spill Act of 1990, Oil Pollution Act, is that BP has contracts with a whole bunch of contractors on file in the event that there is an oil spill. And as soon as the Deep Horizon well went down, then their job is to activate those and start paying them.
And here's Major Garrett of Fox News, who also asked about the Seastack scandal.
Some in your government have said the federal government's boot is on the neck of BP. Are you comfortable with that imagery, sir? Is your boot on the neck of BP? And can you tell the American public, sir, what your White House did or did not offer Congressman Seastack to not enter the Democratic senatorial primary?
And here's Obama's double talk.
There will be an official response shortly on the Seastack issue. Nothing improper took place. You know, with respect to the metaphor that was used, I would say that, we don't need to use language like that. What we need is actions that make sure that BP is being held accountable.
So he says he'll have an answer soon? But President Obama, events are catching up with you. Here's Joe Haystack himself explaining what happened.
President Clinton had called me last summer, and I just didn't feel it was right for me to talk about that conversation. He called last summer, and during the conversation, he talked about how tough this Democrat primary might be if I got in. And he also said, you know, you've done well in the House, and your military background can really make a mark there. And then brought up that during a conversation Rahm Emanuel had brought up about a presidential board of something, you know, if I were to stay in the House.
Well, this could bring down the entire presidency, but Haystack still has great respect for Clinton anyway.
How close is your relationship with Bill Clinton? Can you just talk about your admiration for him?
I have great respect and admiration for President Clinton.
I don't believe this story is going away.
Savage.
Our next guest on the Savage Nation is Dr. Scott Gottlieb, a practicing physician. He's going to talk about how Obamacare is going to change his practice and our health care. He joins us again to talk about his latest article from the Wall Street Journal entitled, No, You Can't Keep Your Health Plan, which has even gotten a response from the White House. Dr. Gottlieb, welcome back to the Savage Nation.
Well, one of the issues I think that the administration is going to have to contend with is the fact that there's been a lot of changes in the private healthcare market as a consequence of healthcare reform, as insurance companies and doctors start to read the legislation and adapt their businesses. And those changes, I think, are going to have bad implications for patients. It's going to make it harder to get access to healthcare for patients. It's going to make it harder to get appointments with physicians. It's going to mean that there'll be less insurance plans offered in the marketplace. Now, it's unclear what will happen starting in 2014 once these new state exchanges get up and running that the legislation creates. But what we know is between now and 2014, there's going to be a lot of pain for consumers. And I think the White House is worried about that. And what the article did in the Wall Street Journal was aggregate some of the data and some of the anecdotal experience in the marketplace right now to really make the case that insurance companies are pulling out of certain states. Doctors are starting to consolidate. They're starting to sell their medical practices to hospitals. And health insurers are trying to vertically integrate by buying up medical practices and forming tighter networks with physicians so that they can clamp down on physicians.
Well, what is driving this behavior?
There's a couple of things that are driving this kind of behavior. With respect to the insurance companies, what the legislation does is it immediately caps the ability of insurance companies to use their premium revenue to support the actual administration of the plans. And so once you do that, once you tell insurance companies how they have to spend their money, some of those plans are going to become unprofitable and will actually have to pull out of the states. At the same time, the bill immediately imposes new mandates on the insurance plans in terms of what they need to offer. So the effect is that you're controlling how the plans spend their money, and then you're controlling what they need to offer in the way of benefits. And so plans have no other option to try to control costs other than to try to lower the price of the product they're delivering. And the product that they're delivering is the insurance. And the only way to lower the cost of that insurance is to pay physicians less and pay for less medical care. And that's, in fact, what they're trying to do. They're trying to get the market leverage over doctors so that they can bring down reimbursement rates and they can also get better control over the kinds of tests and procedures that doctors do so they can cut down on utilization and spend less money that way. It's really a throwback, if you will, to the old managed care model, the old model of HMOs, where the insurance companies were managed care organizations that truly did try to manage care. And we all know that was very unpopular. Well, that's the way the industry is going right now, and the bill's pushing them in that direction.
What about on the doctor side of all this?
On the physician front, with respect to doctors, doctors are looking at the same legislation, and what they see is a lot of new mandates on their medical practice, a lot of new costly mandates. So, for example, they have to go out and buy expensive information technology systems in their offices. There's new requirements for record keeping. And at the same time, reimbursement rates for doctors are coming down quite sharply under Medicare. And right now, overhead costs account for about 60% of all the revenue in a medical practice, and that's going to go up quite significantly. The other thing that's going up is the cost of medical malpractice premiums. And so what doctors are doing is they're looking out on the same landscape. They're looking at the legislation, and they're saying, I can't run a business in this environment. And the hospitals are coming along and offering them contracts to basically buy out the medical practices and turn them into salaried employees and run the medical practices. Now, from the hospital standpoint, that's advantageous because they'll give them more leverage against the insurers. Because the insurers themselves, the insurance companies, are starting to consolidate and merge, and so the hospitals want to gain leverage on the insurance companies. And for the doctors, selling your practice to a hospital in this environment is attractive because you don't, your costs are going up, your revenue is coming down. If the hospital is going to step in and say, we're going to guarantee you a salary for the next 15 years and we're going to pick up all your costs, even if they continue to go up, that looks attractive to the physicians. And so by next year, 60% of all doctors in the country will be salaried employees. And if you look back just about 5 years ago, well less than half of all physicians either worked for hospitals or large health systems. And another thing we looked at was the searches underway for doctor jobs. So there's a handful of very large recruiting firms that recruit physicians for medical practice in hospitals. And 50% of all of the open searches are for jobs in hospitals. And if you look back a couple of years ago, it was about 25%. So there's a much, much higher number of open searches for doctors for hospital positions as opposed to physicians in community practices and private practices. I think that's another leading indicator of the trends that are underway.
Hmm.
Taken together, the thrust of the piece was that basically you can't keep your health plan. The president promised consumers that under his health plan, they'll be able to keep their plan if they like it. And those were, that's pretty close to the language he used. And what I said is, no, you can't. You're not going to be able to keep your plan because your plan's going away. Your doctor might be going away. And this got a reaction, actually, from the White House. They posted a response to it on the White House blog saying, yes, you will be able to keep your health plan. But they really didn't refute the facts. They really didn't refute what I argued is underway in the marketplace. They just said that the implications of the changes will be different than the way I expressed it. But I don't think it's going to be different. I think that the administration right now is very worried about the fact that there are changes underway in the marketplace that were set in motion by the legislation that are not going to be attractive for consumers.
Well, what can people do?
I think people are going to have fewer choices with respect to the health plans, and I think people are going to have fewer options to find physicians. They're going to find that the plans that they do enter into the health insurance plans are going to have much tighter networks, and they're going to have to go out of network to, in more cases, to have the physician that they want. I'm not sure there's much a consumer can do. These changes have been set in motion. I think they're going to accelerate. And I think 2 or 3 years from now, we're going to be looking at an environment where there's less choice of health plans. There's less choice of physicians. Now, whether or not that situation changes in 2014 when these new state exchanges get up and running is an open question. I would argue that it won't change because I don't think a lot of health insurance plans are going to enter these state exchanges. I don't think it's going to be a very attractive business opportunity for them. And so I still think you're going to see just a handful of insurance companies entering these state exchanges as the insurance industry starts to consolidate, and you'll start to see mergers in the insurance industry and fewer insurers. But others would argue that once the state exchanges get up and running, it'll alleviate some of the pressure that's been caused as a result of legislation. From a political standpoint, I think the reason why the administration's worried is because the president has to run for re-election in 2012, and I think by 2012 we'll find an environment where there'll be fewer choices of health insurance plans. Premiums will have gone up to the extent that the politicians allow insurers to hike premiums, but I think that they're going to browbeat the insurers and try to hold down the premium increases. And the insurance plans will start to evolve themselves into more of a managed care model, where they're tightly controlling access to doctors and utilization of certain services.
Dr. Gottlieb, thanks again for being on the Savage Nation.
Savage.
It's time for something lighter. Joining us now is James Herson with his report on what's going on in Hollywood.
Well, the culture lost a genial, positive, warm, endearing, and funny entertainment figure this week. This man had more than his share of obstacles and tragedies, yet he was incredibly successful and always remained an optimist. Art Linkletter. He spent decades in the entertainment media in an amazing variety of roles: radio broadcaster, television host, product spokesperson, and even anti-drug advocate. He hosted the Golden Age television shows People Are Funny and House Party back in the 50s and 60s, and he had an uncanny ability to interview ordinary folks, and especially kids. He passed away at the ripe age of 97.
Wow.
Linkletter was a pioneer of a different kind of reality show, one that found humor in the reactions and statements of ordinary people. In People Are Funny, Linkletter had folks perform stunts and challenges for prizes. His House Party was a variety show, and it's remembered best for a segment called Kids Say the Darndest Things.
Hello there. I've been talking to people on radio and television for 19 years, and I found that the most interesting and the best interviews are with ladies over 80 and with children under 10. And for the same reason, they tell you the truth. Without fear or favor, they answer any question you want to know. For instance, the little girl, 5-year-old girl, I said to her, "How'd your mother and daddy meet?" She says, "Well, they were at a dance, and he was flirting with her, and she wouldn't go out with him because she thought he was too old for her. And then he telephoned her, but she wouldn't go out because she thought he was too old. And he kept phoning, and finally she went out with him, and she found out he wasn't so old after all."
This guy was brilliant at making small children feel comfortable enough to yield incredibly funny material. In fact, Bill Cosby hosted a remake of the show that was, in effect, a continuing tribute to Linkletter. Now, the departure of Art Linkletter makes us take a look at our pop culture, and we can't help but notice just how much innocence we have lost. His programs were wholesome, and they would have no venue or audience today in the current edgy media. You know, if we look at network shows like Cougar Town and the upcoming programs Friends with Benefits, which is basically the old Friends show, except now they're just having promiscuous sex whenever they want to.
Unbelievable.
Can you imagine a show today with a title that used the term darndest? Even back then, television critics and intellectuals hated Linkletter and his shows. They sneeringly accused this guy of being trite and banal. Millions of Americans disagreed, though. And Linkletter's television shows were huge, long-running hits. People Are Funny was on NBC on radio and television combined for 19 years. The show was in the top 10 for more than a decade, and House Party had a 25-year run on CBS radio and television combined, and it stayed at the top of the daytime ratings for its entire run. Linkletter's life is a classic American rags-to-riches story. He was born Arthur Gordon Kelly on July 17, 1912, in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan. He was a poster child for the importance of choosing life. His mom, an unwed pregnant mom, put him up for adoption when he was a baby. He was adopted by a middle-aged couple whose two children had died. Their names were Fulton and Mary Linkletter. It wasn't until he was 12 years old, where he was rummaging through his father's desk, that he discovered he was, in fact, adopted.
Hmm.
Now, Linkletter's adopted father was a one-legged street evangelist, a street preacher. His main interest in life was the Bible. The family prayed and performed on street corners, and Art played the triangle. He later said that the religious faith instilled by his father had been a wonderful gift that helped him all through his life. After he graduated from high school, he was only 16 years old. He decided to see the world, so he became what we used to call a hobo. Linkletter hopped freight trains across the United States and took odd jobs. He worked as a meat packer, a harvester, a busboy. And he was a really fast typist, so once he settled down to find steady work, he took a job in a Wall Street bank in October of 1929, just in time to watch the stock market crash. He was a merchant seaman, shipped out in the Pacific. And when his family moved to San Diego, he started radio broadcasting there. And together with quiz show producer John Guidel, a legendary quiz show producer, who produced the show You Bet Your Life, Linkletter made an audition tape, and he came up with this idea of an audience participation show with contests and gags. And Guidel came up with the title People Are Funny. It went on the air in 1942.
Hmm.
Now, Art Linkletter was a very savvy businessman. Maybe it was because he traveled around on freight trains. I don't know. But he was friends with Walt Disney before Walt Disney was Walt Disney, when Disney's ideas were only dreams in his mind. And Disney asked Linkletter, do me a favor, host this live broadcast of this amusement park I'm opening up out there in California, Disneyland. But Disney had used up all his finances to open the park, and he was broke. So he could only afford to pay Art Linkletter union scale for the job. So get this. Linkletter tells Disney, instead of a fee, he would take the exclusive rights to the camera and film sales at Disneyland, oh, for the next 10 years. And he got it.
No. Are you kidding?
That turned out to be the most lucrative gig he ever had. Linkletter also had one of the most successful marriages in media. He wed Lois Forrester in 1936. And stayed married. The couple had five kids. But this is where Art had to deal with a lot of heartache. In 1969, his daughter Diane jumped to her death from a six-story apartment.
Oh, my God.
It was said to be drugs, and Linkletter's response to the tragedy was to become a spokesperson against drug use and an advisor to the president, that was Richard Nixon at the time, on drug policy. Linkletter's son, Robert, died in a car accident in 1980. Another of his sons, Jack, died of lymphoma in 2007.
Oh, my God.
Quote, "Life is not fair, not easy," Linkletter said in an interview. "Outside peer pressure can wreak havoc with the nicest families. So that's the part. That's the gamble. But I'm an optimist," he said. "Even though I've had tragedies in my life and I've seen a lot of difficult things, I still am an optimist." And that's the way Linkletter lived. Interestingly, this guy once said something that reminds me of another radio personality, one that's on the air today. Here's what Linkletter said, quote, "I stand fearlessly for small dogs, the American flag, motherhood, and the Bible." That sounds like a kindred spirit, doesn't it, Michael? Back to you, my friend.
Thanks for the report, James.
Savage.
The day that the rig collapsed and fell to the bottom of the ocean, I had my team in the Oval Office that first day. Those who think that we were either slow on our response or lacked urgency don't know the facts. This has been our highest priority since this crisis occurred. Personally, I'm briefed every day, and I probably had more meetings on this issue than just about any issue since we did our Afghan review. And we understood from day one the potential enormity of this crisis and acted accordingly.
Now, let's not leave the Gulf Coast so fast, okay? Because we have to remember the following, right? The reason that the left wing turned on Obama and made the Gulf oil spill into Obama's Katrina is because Obama failed his followers in their religion of the environment. You see, to the left wing, the environment is their religion, and he was their messiah who could not only walk on water, but part the Red Sea. After it became apparent to even the most ardent Democrat Obama worshippers that their messiah had abandoned them by taking 38 days to make a speech about the biggest environmental disaster since the Three Mile Island nuclear meltdown, perhaps even greater in terms of long-term effects. To these worshippers of nature, where Gaia is their religion, the death of clams, mussels, shrimp, birds, and fish became too much to ignore. Finally, they saw that Obama was mortal, and they attacked, at first in small newspaper columns, then on talk shows, and then, as if a dam had burst, at the first news conference the Messiah had held in over 10 months, they saw that not only could he not part the Red Sea and lead them to Nirvana, but he could not even part the Black Sea of sludge that decimated hundreds of miles of the Gulf Coast and the sea for decades to come. Remember what you heard on the Savage Nation. Let's stop for a minute. I know you listen because this is one of the last places you can get real, honest, independent, conservative opinions and unfiltered news. And I want you to get the full impact of the Savage Nation. Go to TRN1.com, become a premium member, and get Savage Live, Savage Archives, and the Savage Podcast at TRN1.com. Click on my picture at TRN1.com today. And now let's see what's on my website, MichaelSavage.com. Well, you heard all of the latest news. I mean, that you know already, the Joe Haystack story. Now they're blaming Bill Clinton. The oil is still flowing, by the way. They say it's stemmed, but it could resume. It's going well. The spill could be twice the Exxon Valdez. There's a 22-mile-long deep-sea plume that was just discovered. On the doomed rig, nobody was in charge. Obama is in Chicago disrespecting the military instead of being at Arlington. And he said, go to the beaches. They're open. In Louisiana, 7 cleanup workers were hospitalized. In Louisiana, Obama won't return a call of the lawmaker representing the district of the rig. Huh? The damage to the ecosystem will take years to know. I guess they could always blame Nixon for it. So they're laying the blame on him, huh? How do you like that? And guess who he had lunch with yesterday? Huh? Obama and Clinton. I guess they could blame Clinton for the oil spill, too. They could eventually say that Clinton was on the rig with a young lady getting a new a purple dress fitted out when the rig tipped over. And they could Clinton could come out and say that he was on the rig when it, when it tipped. And he did it during the very, very vigorous fitting for the new dress.
They could call him Oil Slick Willie.
Well, they're calling Obama slick now. At least I am. He seems to have picked up the same oily tracks that led to Clinton. Okay, let's go to michaelsavage.com, borders, language, and culture. You got to listen to the audio. The left wing attacks Obama because he failed their nature religion. It's longer than the piece I just gave you. The U.S. is training a new Palestinian army. Did you know that? Oh, you didn't know that. 3-star Lieutenant General Keith Dayton has been working here since the takeover of the Gaza Strip by the violent extremist Hamas in 2007, and the U.S. has supplied them with weapons and training, special forces training. And you wonder why Rahm Emanuel is hiding at the Western Wall, huh? Kagan required global law at Harvard, but not U.S. constitutional law. That's Kagan, the plant. And oh yes, the head of a Marxist-led institute has joined the Obama team in the State Department under Hillary Clinton. The policy director at a George Soros-funded, Marxist-founded organization calling itself Free Press has just taken a key State Department position, according to WorldNet Daily. This is amazing to me. Are you bored yet? Let's have a little rock and roll for the minute on the Savage Nation. I don't want to bum people out. Skips Arlington and goes for fun in Chicago. It's all on michaelsavage.com. Spain loses AAA rating amid deficit crisis. Olé. Today's college kids lack empathy because they've grown up on computers. They feel nothing. And oh yes, the Senate is considering a Nancy Pelosi-led union pension bailout of billions, hundreds of billions of dollars to bail out the unions. Can you believe this? And oh yes, also on Michael Savage. Did you read this one? Muslims have killed 80 Muslims in mosques in Pakistan because this sect of Islam doesn't believe Muhammad was the prophet. Oh, yes, there's another story. The Ground Zero Mosque founder says that his goal is Sharia, not dialogue. That's right, according to former terrorist Walid Shobhat. The Ground Zero Mosque founder, Imam Faisal Abdul Rauf's English statements and his Arabic comments are two different things. He's trying to see Sharia law here. Thank you, Mayor Blumenberg. And also on michaelsavage.com, San Fran libs protest Obama. Drug gangs have taken over a sleepy New York river town that was once a sanctuary of beauty. All thanks to what? Federal urban renewal. All of the rats ran up from New York City for the urban renewal money, and now they're taking over the town. The FBI had to be called in to contain them. Play some music for a minute.
Dip, 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 dip. Sa-la-la-la, sa-la-la-la, butter. Sa-la-la-la, sa-la-la-la, butter. Sa-la-la-la, sa-la-la-la, butter.
I needed an oatmeal raisin cookie and a cup of coffee with chocolate, vanilla, and cinnamon in it. In other words, I survived Starbucks before this show. I mean, I'm on a low-fat diet for the last 40 years. I avoid dairy now for the last 3 years. And all of my minor arthritic symptoms went away once I kicked dairy. But I'll tell you, this was the day I needed the sugar. So I said, isn't any of your stuff without dairy? No, sir. It's all got butter. I said, all right. I won't tell myself. You know what I mean? Give me the oatmeal raisin cookie. You know, when you don't eat that stuff, it is so good. Ugh. I guess I'll be limping home limping home tonight. But.
Well, when I get the paper, I read it through and through. And my girl never fails to say, if there is any work for me. I'm going to go back to the house, hear that woman's mouth.
Remember, I am Michael Savage. What do I do for a living? I'm a talk show host, which means I give you my opinion. One man's opinion, right? One man's opinion based upon what I think are good facts. And then you decide whether or not you agree with me on whatever I'm talking about. I'm not a revolutionary. I am not a political activist. I'm not a politician. I make this commitment. I will never run for office. I am not a community activist. I will not start a third party. I've given up on all of the activism. With God's will and your listenership, I shall return.
Well, when I get the paper.
Savage.